Thanks for listening to our podcast. This episode is made possible by our sponsor, CSU Ramzone, powered by the CSU Bookstore, a great sponsor of our Pick'em and Bracket contest all year long, and Ginger & Baker, our favorite restaurant on the planet, and of course, Peterson Toyota, our title sponsor of the podcast. This March, unleash the power of the 2024 Toyota Tundra iForce Max with Peterson's exclusive offer of 2.25% APR for 48 months. This is a great chance to conquer the road with an unbeatable deal. Visit Peterson today for a test drive. You can also experience hassle-free car shopping with SmartPath, which makes it easy for you to find the ideal vehicle tailored to your preferences. Explore flexible financing and choose a payment plan that aligns perfectly with your budget. Check out the SmartPath experience today and embark on your journey to find your dream Toyota. Peterson Toyota has a large selection as well as certified pre-owned vehicles. Whatever you're looking for, Peterson Toyota has something for you, all at competitive pricing and financing. If you're in the market for a new used vehicle, please give Peterson Toyota first shot at your business. Thanks. Enjoy the show. Welcome to Ram Nation Radio. I'm Joel Cantalamessa with Mike Rowe and a good buddy, Steve Ivey. Adam Nygon will join us in a little bit, live from DIA. He's heading out to the Mountain West Tournament tonight. Boys, are either of you guys going out?
I made the executive decision today. I am not going.
And
you're
for me,
saving it for next week, right?
Saving it for next week.
And Joel, I'm the same. Two reasons, saving it for next week. Number two, I don't handle Vegas for more than 48 hours. I've been there for more than 48 and gone crazy. So if I went out Wednesday, I'd be back on Friday. And so I wouldn't be necessarily happy if CSU won. So that's the other reason I avoid the tournament.
Well, I'm kind of the reverse. I am, my wife's turning 50, so I can't, that's Thursday. So I can't go out till Friday. I made the commitment to still go, hoping that the Rams will still be alive at that point. If they're not, that wouldn't be the first time I've made that trip out before or after they have already been eliminated. Mike, you think you were part of one of those, but
yep.
But anyway, you know, with this.
Hey, real quick,
in,
Joel, can I interrupt for 1 second? Are
yeah?
you allowed to say your wife turns 50?
I might edit that out now that I think about it.
Your wife turned 27.
Regardless, it's a big birthday. So, couldn't leave on her birthday, leave her behind. So anyway, really fun game down at Air Force. Steve, I know you talked about it on your podcast yesterday, and we were just kind of talking off air, but first of all, the crowd down there was really fun. I love that the Ram fans take over when we go to Clune, especially when the Rams are good. Well, they average about 1600 people. There was almost 5,000 there. So, you know, that there was definitely a much bigger Ram contingent than there was Air Force fans there. It was a great atmosphere for CSU fans too.
Kyle Neves commented to me on the Twitters that it was their largest crowd since 2013.
Wow.
And, and you want to know something else? I'll bet you if I looked it up, the 2013 crowd was CSU when we had that really good team with finished second and then, lost in the second round of the NCAAs with Iverson and Green and Ike Meyer and all those guys. I guarantee it was CSU.
You were saying before we started recording, and I think you also said it on your podcast, but with the large contingent at the Air Force Academy Saturday, CSU was the played in front of the most fans at Mountain West Conference this year.
Yeah, and it's we played in front of an average of, it was 9,200 and change. The next closest was San Diego State at about 8,400. And if I recall correctly, Boise State played in front of an average of 5,900. It's like 3,300 less than what we played against. And the point I was trying to make is it's harder to play in front of lots of people that are rooting against you. That's what the home crowd advantage is all about. That also helps get referees against you as well, but that's why you want sellouts. That's one thing that's stacked against CSU, and I talked to Joel about, if you listened, I talked about, you know, I said, like, are we rock stars? And I said, you know, maybe we are, maybe people like us, but I think it has to do with the ranking, the fact that we were ranked more than any other team, and got as high as 13th, and that attracted a lot of people at these road venues wanting to see us get beat. And that's kind of the double-edged sword. You know, you get the wonderful visibility for the program, but it makes you, it puts a target on your back. And there's no doubt CSU had a target on their back whenever they traveled.
What do you think the difference is? Why we do seem to travel well down to Colorado Springs, but we don't necessarily travel that well to Laramie. And that's closer for people that live in.
Is that a real question?
That's not a question. That's well, I live an hour closer. I'm an hour from Laramie and 2 hours from Clune. But and my wife, you know, she's an easy sell to get in the car to go to Colorado Springs. But
she won't go to
the
Laramie.
First time she ever went to Laramie, that she looked at me and said, "Do people actually live here?" And she's never been back.
Yeah.
First time Tracy went was the last time she went. And that was a while ago. That was dating round one. So, it's hard to get your better half up there.
Yeah. It's not pleasant. Like, you go down the Springs and you're not going to get, well, plus Section 8 wasn't there in full force, right? None of the football players were sitting there in their student section. And so it was pretty mild. Sometimes when they're in full force, it can get a little ruthless when they're sitting right on top of the CSU bench and yelled at them the whole game. But, you know, going down there this weekend was so tame. Like, no one's giving you the business down there. If you go to Laramie, you better be prepared for someone in your ear the whole game. And they're pretty ruthless up there. But actually, I kind of like that. I mean, I like going to games up there. I kind of like going in enemy territory, but I can see why people kind of lean towards being more willing to go to the Springs than Laramie. But anyway,
I don't know if you guys found this, but I thought the support staff, the yellow coats at Air Force, were fantastic. They were very nice, very open, very friendly. How are you today? Greeting people on the way out. Thank you for coming. That would be something I'd love to add when I talk to John Weber next time. I'm going to pass it on to him. That's something he can encourage with his staff. They were fantastic. So
it's always been that way down at Clune. I have ran into some yellow coats that weren't too friendly. Almost got kicked out just because I stood up when we nailed a three. Dorian Green hit a huge three. I think it had to have been either 12 or 13. And we just happened to have floor seats, and we were on press row and just stood up and felt the tap on the shoulder. And I'm like, I didn't cuss. I hadn't been drinking. And you're getting ready to toss me because I stood up to celebrate a three-pointer. So yeah, they were awesome. Whataburger coupons as soon as as soon as the game was over. So yeah, gotta love that.
Nice.
The only downside for my wife was she got a Diet Coke that cost $5.50, and then she went out to get some like popcorn, and they had hot honey roasted nuts for $8, and she bought a bag, and they weren't hot. And her first comment was, "These aren't very good." And I got real hot honey roasted nuts when we went to see CSU at the MGM Grand in Las Vegas to play in Washington, and they only cost $4. She goes, "They got $8 out of this." It was like ridiculous. So she was upset that she had to pay so much for a product inferior to what she got in Las Vegas, which is notoriously the most expensive place on the planet.
Right.
Love it.
Well, to talk about the game, I'm off to a slow start. I think Air Force built up a 10-point lead there early on, and I think what really turned the game was six free throw attempts in one trip. It was the foul with the double technicals, one on I don't remember what player got the foul, but then Joe Scott.
Obecker, yep.
He slammed the ball down, upset with that he got called for a foul, and then Joe Scott got into it with the same official, and he teed him up. And this was just, 2 minutes after Nico got a tech? So the same official called three technical fouls within, 3 minutes. It was, 6 minutes into the game, something like that. It was just bizarre officiating. But do you think that was kind of what changed our fortune there early on?
There were two moments in the first half. The first one that came before the text was when we hit the three straight threes. And, you know, when we when we have our outside shooting has been a little suspect for quite a while. I cannot remember the last time that was something we would do regularly back in November and December. We see you, we buried them with threes in the first half. That was huge to me that all of a sudden it's like, oh, wow, it's coming. It's starting to come. When I saw the two by Isaiah and then the one by Neek. And then, like you said, the free throw burst, that was that got us back to even at halftime. And that was important because we hadn't played a very good first half. You go in even after not playing very good, but that gives you all kind of momentum coming out of the locker room.
You know, the last time we had threes like that was the first half against San Diego State there. And we've seen our fortune since that half over the last three weeks. So it was, yeah, that was great seeing that. And yeah, we're down 10 and get the stops that we needed. We made the open threes too. That's the thing. We worked the ball around, we got the open looks and we knocked them down, and we just haven't been doing that. We hadn't done that in the first 8 minutes, 12 minutes of the first half on Saturday. And for that to happen, I think that was probably bigger than the free throws. Free throws got us the lead, but or tied it up. But those threes, you just saw confidence with our squad when that happened.
Well, Zay sure went out with a bang in his regular season finale. 29 points, just three assists there. He wasn't helped a lot by some missed shots there, but and missed a free throw towards the end of the game there. It would have given him 30. Then Joel Scott, 16 and 3. Neek, 15 points and 9 rebounds. It was kind of cool to see those threes. You know, obviously Zay came up huge when we need him in this game on the road. And then the two local boys, Joel and Neek. How'd you feel about those guys stepping up in front of their family and friends there, and a nice contingent for following them when we needed to have that win?
Yeah, that was, you know, I that was exciting to me to see. And there were a large number of people that were non-CSU people that were there to see them. Local people. I actually saw somewhere, I think on Twitter, somebody drove down from Spearfish, South Dakota, where Black Hill State is located, and drove down to see Joel play his last regular season game. So those guys, just because of how they play, are very, very popular. And like I said, there was a large number of Colorado Springs people there after the game. I stayed around a little bit, and there was Joel signing autographs, and there were a lot of Air Force kids. Kids wearing Air Force sweatshirts that were looking for autographs from Joel, because he's got the family has a great reputation down there. So that was fun.
You know, that's one of the things that I think people have overlooked the last couple of weeks, other than Isaiah. Our most consistent players has been Joel Scott. And he's been bullying. He's been, you know, making the shots inside. Something that he struggled with kind of after the CSU Pueblo game through the first half of conference play, and he's really turned it on. And you know, I saw Nygon had his voting, or what he thought was the All Mountain West, and he had Joel Scott as third team, and I think that's right. I think he's really overlooked, but he's been a force for us inside, and it's been fun watching him, and it was great. See, it was awesome. The whole crowd was great. It's just a fun experience, and it's always great just taking it to Air Force.
Man, yeah. Speaking of Joel Scott, not even on the honorable mention list.
You know, Mike, I did my podcast, and I had Joel on my third team as well. I didn't have Neek on my first three teams, only because I thought he kind of fell off during conference play. Joel didn't. Joel rose to the occasion and got better and better as the season went on. So I was disappointed he didn't even get honorable mention as well. I have no idea how people miss that.
Yeah. Well, I think you pointed out that somebody, one of the Mountain West writers, didn't even have Jaden Ledee on a first team ballot.
Yeah. Crazy.
Unbelievable. People just, I mean, it shows you what an inexact science this whole thing is, and how you have to take everything with a grain of salt. But so anyway, struggled shooting early on. I think it's from three. They finished 6 of 17, so still really struggling from the perimeter. But the defense, they kind of put it into a new gear in the second half, didn't they? I mean, and that's kind of what gives you a shot and gives you hope going forward is even if you're not shooting well, your defense gives you a shot to stay in games.
In the first half, and then only 20 in the first 15 was the defense, and then guys hitting timely shots, and everybody stepped up and hit what I think was a big shot. Cartier nailed a big three. Clifford had that dunk that was tremendous. Joe Palmer, the end one. Jalen Lake hit this beautiful high banking shot after dribbling and pivoting and shooting about a 10-footer. And every one of those guys, in addition to Joel, Neek, and Zay, came through. Those first seven played well. And Josiah Strong, I didn't mention him as well. You know, one of the things that I thought was interesting, Joel, at the end of the game, you know, Zay picked up that horrible call, fourth foul with about 6 or 6.5 minutes to go. And rather than going with the freshman, they went to a lineup that put Josiah Strong at the point. So you had Strong, Lake, Clifford, Scott, and Cartier in the game. And the question I have there going forward is, do you think we'll see is there a chance we'll see more of that? Do we see the bench shortened as we get into these one-and-done games?
Me personally, I would rather see Tavy coming in to spell at the two and sliding Josiah over there at the one when we are giving Zay his break, as opposed to Evans going to the one and Lakers or Strong at the two. I think it just gives you a little bit better experience. We've seen those glimpses with KC, and I am very excited. You know, Steve and I, we've talked after games before. I'm excited about the future with him. But right now, he really is just kind of struggling. I don't know if it's his confidence. He'll have wide open shots and will completely defer and try to make that extra pass, or he'll try to dribble, and then we just get stuck in offense, on offense. So I really would like to see Tavy getting that. I don't know if it's a health issue, like what's going on. I know that he's been struggling with, poor kid's been, seems like struggling with everything all season long. But this week, I really would like to see kind of that combo more. I thought Josiah played extremely well at the one in that stretch, because that was, you know, that's an opportunity for them to get back, especially because they had Becker on the floor and
Petritus.
Yeah, Petritus as well. And they could have inched back, and we didn't, and that didn't happen. And really, we put the game away during that time that Zay was off the floor. So moving forward, I mean, that's what I'd like to see. I'm not the coach, though.
Yep. You know, in KC's defense, can you imagine a harder role of anybody of what he has to do or what he's trying to do out there, giving minutes of rest to the best player we've ever had? He can't right now. I honestly believe this, as long as Isaiah's around, we won't see the true KC Evans. You just can't see it. He's a really good player. He'll be great next year, but I just think that the role that's defined for him is so difficult that he's doing the best he can, and that's what we're going to get. He's a hell of a player, though.
You know, and like I said, we've seen it. We've seen the glimpses. I mean, especially in the non-conference play, you know, that Creighton game. I mean, the whole time in Kansas City, could have been playing in front of his family. He looked great and got us some huge minutes during both of those, the BC and the Creighton game. So, yeah, like I said, I'm very excited. I think this week, though, I think we got to go with a little bit more experience and then maybe get him a couple minutes. Hopefully we get a lot of points tomorrow and can get the bench a lot of minutes.
Before Adam comes on, curious to get your guys' opinion on how do you feel overall about how CSU is playing at this point going into the Mount West tourney? I mean, what's your confidence level as far as can they do some damage here and make a run in the tournament? Are they playing well enough to do that?
Me personally, I thought the second half we started seeing what this team is really capable of doing it at Air Force. I thought we played a great second half. We started coming on at the end of the first half, but I don't think our defense was as good as it could be. The second half is the first time we've combined both the defense and the offense we came back against Nevada, but I don't think we were that good. I think this is kind of, we were looking like we did against Utah State when we had them at home and beat them by 20, which was our last good performance, and we didn't even shoot well in that game. I started seeing signs of what this team is capable of doing, and teams go through peaks and valleys. I think we might be on the up, and I look forward to seeing what we do against San Jose State tomorrow. I think we're going to give Nevada a really, really good game as long as we get by San Jose State.
I wish we were on the opposite side of Nevada. I just don't think that we match up well with them, even with two close losses, even though that first game, I think it ended up being, what, 12-point loss, something like that. I mean, it was a 4-point game going into the last couple minutes and then fouling, and we couldn't make anything. This team, honestly, any of the top seven teams can win this. It is such a tight conference. And it wouldn't be surprising if we win out. Wouldn't be surprising if Nevada knocks us off if we get by San Jose State. But, yeah, we got to take it one game at a time instead of thinking about that down the road. I really hope that we – as much as I love Timmy, I hope we put it to him and get a 20, 30-point win.
How do you think we match up again? Steve, you kind of alluded to the fact you thought we had a good chance against Nevada. I think we played them tough and actually got, man, they shot very well in both games against us. And, you know, one of the games took a half court shot to beat us. And there's that old adage that it's tough to beat a team three times in a year. So you maybe got that working in your advantage, to your advantage a little bit.
There's another factor. I don't know if you guys saw it. It was announced a few hours ago, but the kid that started, Hunter McIntosh, who started in place of Keenan Blackshear at in Fort Collins, and the kid that absolutely torched Moby off the torched Boise off the bench, 6 for 6 from three and 26 points to give them their win over Boise, is out. He's not traveling to Las Vegas. He's got a bad sore knee. He had a bad knee last year. His knee is sore. They say he'll be back for the NCAA tournament, but he's out of the Mountain West tournament. And that's a big hit for them, losing their top scorer off the bench.
Well, I mean, that's you got to beat Timmy first and then let's see what happens. And me personally, I need those two wins so I can watch some Ram basketball on Friday when I get there. So, all right, before we bring in Adam Nygon, let me pause real quick and tell you that at Ginger and Baker, March Madness is all about pie and whiskey. Whiskey Madness runs all month in the cash. Come in anytime for a $16 blind tasting, and you can vote for your favorite. They'll put all the winners through a bracket. Very cool. You'll taste such whiskeys as Old Elk, Blanton's, Stranahan's, Woodford, and more. If the brown stuff, though, isn't your thing, for all you wine lovers, all bottles on the Cash's award-winning wine list are half price every Thursday, so come on by and try something new. Also, Pie Madness means free pie bites in the cafe and market and a chance to vote for your favorites there as well. Pie sampling happens on March 14th, 16th, 21st, 23rd, and 30th. And don't forget about the great comfort food classics at the cafe restaurant. As you know, Ginger Baker's got the cafe and the cash, so two great restaurants, but they also have a coffee shop, market, teaching kitchen, event spaces. Place is just awesome, guys. Support our friend Ginger Graham and treat yourself to a world-class experience at our favorite place, Ginger and Baker. All right, pleased to welcome in CSU color analyst for the radio network, Adam Nygon, who is about to head to DIA. Playing got delayed, so he's still sitting at home, and we're grateful to get a few minutes with him to talk about a little bit about the Air Force game, but mostly to look ahead here to the Mountain West tournament and what CSU is going to have to do to make a run here. So, hey, Adam, thanks for joining us, buddy. I wanted to first ask, yeah. I mean, what'd you think of the Air Force game? We kind of rehashed that a little bit before you came on, but just give us what your general thoughts are on the team's performance and pulling out that win.
Yeah, it was nice to see us kind of turn it on defensively there in the middle of the first half. You know, it got a little dicey. Think about the time Coach went to that 1-3-1, or not the 1-3-1, about the time we went and picked up full court. You know, I thought that didn't force turnovers, but it made Air Force work with 20 seconds on the shot clock instead of like 28, where, you know, they were hitting all those last second pull-ups and, you know, late layups and stuff. So I think that kind of helped us and forced them to operate a little faster. And then, you know, giving up 60% in the first half dang near, and then clamping down and giving up 39 in the second half. That was the real difference. Is certainly Isaiah going off for 22, kind of buying us some time until we could finally get some stops and run out. But yeah, the defense kind of picking it up there in the second half. That was the big issue to me, or not issue.
So defensively, what do we give, 40-something points to Air Force in the first half? And it, I mean, they were making a lot of shots, but we weren't defending like we normally do. What was the difference there in the second half that were we able to kind of kick it up a notch?
Yeah, I think you were able to start making shots and getting some rhythm offensively. And then, you know, when you're able to kind of force them into some of those tough, you know, contested shots instead of flying for every, you know, shot fake and helping down, you know, you kind of wore down. I mean, Petritus just puts his head down and friggin' goes, you know, like he is just nothing fancy. Just one dribble, two dribble, is just going to try and out tough you there. So, you know, Coach Medved hit it on the post game. He said it was really just coming down to individually guarding the ball and, you know, not relying on that help to get back cut or something like that. So I think, you know, that was a big case of just kind of you versus me and kind of sticking with it as, again, you know, a couple of those guys just put their heads down and go.
How many games have you been on the mic now? Or how many seasons have you been doing this now?
Yeah, this is my eighth, man. Just finished up my eighth regular season. Kind of crazy.
How do you put this season compared to the rest? I mean, kind of put it in perspective for us. Obviously, 2 years ago was a pretty special year, but how would you rate this season overall, and then maybe conference slate wise as well?
Man, it was one of the funnest, you know, regular seasons we've had. You know, it was almost on par, you know, with us, you know, not so much weren't in contention the entire season as much as we were when we had Roddy that final season and everything like that. But all the media attention, I feel like us winning early helped get a lot of that media attention for the Mount West later in the back end. That's, you know, probably going to help us sneak, you know, six teams in here. And I don't know, man, it's just crazy to kind of step back and look at this season and realize that, you know, all the things Isaiah has done, it's just, I take that for granted so much on the air. It's like me and Brian feel like we could talk about Isaiah just constantly. So I feel like maybe we don't enough, you know what I mean? So it's just, he's been so good over the last 6 years, but this season in particular, I mean, for him to turn it up to that notch, you know, I mean, gosh, averaging almost 1.5 more assists per game, you know, career points, you know, and career high in field goal percentage, all that good stuff. So it's been kind of one of those that just like, man, if we could get a couple more guys to just honestly shoot what they shot last year or the year before, it's just, man, these, you know, we went from the 19th best, you know, 3-point shooting team on December 1st to today, it looks like we're 33% at 186, you know, and that's 1.5 less threes per game. And, you know, that's really put a lot of pressure on that defense and good for us because we're standing tall and our defense has kept us in a lot of these games and the reason why we win a lot of these games.
Hey, Adam, I hear you talking about Isaiah and maybe not talking enough about him. I was out just looking at some historical stats and stuff. Isaiah is 14 points away from passing Jerry West and David Thompson on the all-time NCAA scoring list. That to me is amazing. Those are two basketball gods.
that's some fun company, man. He's going to be up there with a lot of people. I mean, it's so crazy what to do with that fifth year, you know, and now he's getting his extra time and he's only missed 7 career games. And, you know, a third of all the assists that have come out of CSU over the last 5.5 years are basically from Isaiah. And, you know, those stats, just like, you just look at him and you're just like, oh my gosh, he's so good. You know, what are we going to do without this guy? But, you know, thankfully we still got him here for a few more weeks, at least I hope. And I'm going to hold on as long as I can.
You mentioned the shooting woes. What do you attribute that to? Is it legs at this point in the season? Is it confidence? Is it better defense, you know, you're facing?
No, it's that. Sure, you're playing a lot tougher teams, but, man, it's confidence. And it's confidence where you can see guys making, you know, you get that extra pass and then they make the extra, extra pass. That's not really that, you know, they should have shot that. They should have been like, go, you know, I'm open. I got to take this one. And so, you know, you see that with a little bit with Joe Palmer, especially at Air Force, where he kind of just has a wide open three, forget it. I'm going right to the rim and kind of gets fouled, you know, good for him and stuff like that. But I just want those guys who are proven shooters that, you know, that confidence has to flip where you, you know, if people leave you open, that's got to be a mistake on them and you got to bury them for that. And that's the confidence that has to switch. And to me, it's just, we look like we know we're shooting bad, you know? And so, good news is Nick Clifford seems to be coming back and coming out of his slump. He's 6 for 12 over his last four games. And on top of that, he's averaging 11 points, 4.5 assists, 8 rebounds, and 2.25 steals per game. So, you know, seems like he might have got his swagger back a little bit as he, you know, stepped in and kind of shook one into a three-pointer walk in the other day. That was pretty nice. So if you guys do that, they still got a lot of confidence. So for me, it's all mental, man. If we can just let one guy maybe make like, what, 4 or 5 in a game, it's going to just – everybody's going to explode. You feel it, and it's just unfortunate you haven't seen it yet.
We talked to Neek, what, a month ago, Mike and Steve? I can't remember if you were on that. I think you were. But one of the things he said was, and this was like at the beginning of their, at the towards the beginning of their slide, shooting wise. And he said one of the things he noticed was that maybe they were not real good in their shot selection. You kind of alluding to the fact that they're now being hesitant to shoot and not taking some open shots. But man, I tell you, I just remember against Air Force the other day, you got a guy like Josiah Strong who struggled for the most part shooting from the perimeter this season, and he's shooting real early in the shot clock some threes when there's some other guys that I'd rather have the ball in their hand. So I think it's probably a combo of a lot of things going on. But that being said, the fact that they're not shooting well, they are playing good defense. I asked the guys this before you came on, but what is your confidence level right now with how the team is playing, just the brand of basketball they're playing? How do you think that they are ready to go here in the Mountain West tournament to make any sort of run?
I think they're battle tested and they're, you know, probably a little embarrassed at finishing seventh after, you know, all the hype and, you know, being as high as what, 12 and 13 in the nation, and then, you know, end up being the worst of the best in the Mountain West this year. And, you know, that's got to bite at you a little bit. And you're on I think a good end of the bracket where, you know, if you can beat San Jose State, you can, you know, face Nevada, who's got to beat you three times and beat you twice, really kind of Jared Lucas has just torched you. And so if you can find, you know, a way to maybe make that one right, you get to the semis and then anything can happen. So it's, I like our confidence. I like that we've, you know, we're battle tested with our hardest, you know, conference schedule and all that. But I think most part is guys feel a little embarrassed at finishing seventh, as it's just like, you know, oh my gosh, you know, that shouldn't have happened. What's going on? You know? So for them to kind of, you know, wake up to that, you know, and say, hey, all right, it's something else to prove here in Vegas. So I kind of see that in them a little bit, and they're just, you know, ready to fight, you know, every possession. And that's a well-coached team is, you know, you can't make shots, whatever, but if guys are still playing hard and engaged, you know, that's what you like about the staff.
You know, we're heading into one and done season. And we talked about something before you came on, and that's when Zay went out of the game with his fourth foul after that horrible call. Instead of bringing in Tavy or Casey Evans, they went with Josiah and Jalen in the backcourt. And that's the first time I remember them doing that all year. My question for you is, with us going one and done, do you think we're going to see us shorten the bench a little bit in the from here in?
I would say yes, but like, I don't know. Tavy Jackson has come in and he's made some shots, you know. For me, like, you need the guy who's going to be able to stand in the corner on that wing and know that you're going to have a wide open shot and he needs to bury it. You know, I kind of joked with Medved a couple games ago about, you know, man, I would have just thrown Luke Murphy in the game and just had him stand in the corner if nobody else was going to make one. You know, like, it's just somebody needs to come in and make a shot for us. And I think they're willing to try anything they can to just get a spark and get an edge. But to me, the thing that I think they need to find a way to tweak better with their lineups is, I don't really like when they go to the Joe Palmer at the four spot. you know, they really put him in a tough spot against some of those big fours down low, to where, like, yes, he fights, he gets to fronts, he gets deflections, but when they do catch that ball, all they have to do is turn a score over the top, and he's just, you know, undersized at that position. So for me, it may be shifting more to Bemba in there a few if he can stay out of foul trouble. But, you know, you got to find out a way to use Joe Palmer as sparingly as you can, because if he's not making shots, it's hard to keep him, you know, engaged and find more minutes for him, you know, if he's not doing it on the other end for you. So that's my biggest probably roster issue and adjustment.
One of the things that could get you beat real quick in the conference tournament or in the NCAA tournament is not hitting those key open threes, but also free throws. I feel like we're struggling from the line a little bit. Does that concern you at all? Is that something that carries over into tournament play?
It concerns me on the road, just because the split stats of some of the guys on the road versus at home are ridiculous, especially from the free throw line. But, you know, hey, we finished number one in the conference in free throw shooting. So, you know, as tough as it looks, it might have just been Joel Scott going 8 of 16 the other night that maybe, you know, maybe thought we were missing a lot. But in fact, you know, I think we only missed two other free throws besides Joel missing, you know, the 8 that he missed. So, you know, to me, it's on a neutral floor, you know, with a Nevada, I don't know how well they're going to travel, but, you know, I'm excited to get on a neutral floor, because especially for free throws, the pressure is there, but you certainly don't have the, you know, 15, 20,000 screaming at you, probably on our side of the bracket, at least.
Mike, do you have anything? I don't want to keep talking over you.
No, you're doing well. You guys are asking everything that I was going to ask.
Well, feel free to jump in. I don't mean to talk over both of you guys.
No, that's cool. I get it.
Yeah. You're used to it.
Yeah.
You're used to it.
Somebody was talking to John Weber, like, I'm standing right next to him, and he was like, yeah, I was listening to Joel's podcast the other day, and I was like, what? Like, there's someone else on there.
Some of us are a little more memorable than others.
Right?
I got a couple of stats if you guys want to just throw a couple crazy things at you. I've been researching a little bit on the years here, and just something to throw out. So, we have made 8 or more threes this year against D1 opponents just 6 times. So in the last 4 years or 5 years previous, last year was 12 times, the year before that 16 times, the year before that 18 times, and the year before that 15 times, the year before that 14 times. So to have it only be 6 times in a season when, you know, gosh, we were averaging close to like, you know, 12 or 13 per season of 8 or more threes a game. I mean, to have to honestly look at our record and see it the way it is, I mean, that's pretty impressive to honestly, in this day and age in college basketball, to not be making threes and still be winning games.
That's interesting. I mean, it's obvious we know that we haven't been making the threes this year, and we've seen better shooting in the past. But, you know, the other part that you hear espoused from the coaching staff is, like the three, love the paint. We're really loving the paint with Pat and Rashawn and Joel this year, and that's showing up in the fact that we're top 10 in 2-point field goal percentage in the nation as well. So, and we're good, we get to the free throw line as well. And I think that makes us, as long as we make open threes, I'm okay with the making of, you know, we could have made 8 the other day and shot, you know, 8 for 17, and that wouldn't have been unusual. We just haven't shot it well. We've shot enough shots to make 8 a game. We're just not doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I don't think.
Yeah, that's.
I think the only games that we have shot over 40% in conference play are Air Force and at Fresno. So I may be wrong, but my last time I remember looking that up, I think that's what it was. So it's been really bleak. what other numbers are there for us? Is that it, Adam?
I got another defensive one I'll hit you with. So defensively, we haven't given up 80 points since December 6th and have only done so 3 times this season. But we've only given up 70 in conference just 8 times now with, you know, giving up 70 to Air Force that last game kind of sucks. But, you know, number 2 in effective field goal defense in conference and number 1 in two-point field goal defense. So, you know, we've only given up 45% field goal defensively just 6 times in conference in 18 games. So, you know, again, you got, you know, you want to hate on the three and how bad they're doing it. But again, love the paint on both ends of the floor right now, defensively and offensively, just getting it done.
You know, they always say defense travels. So that's if they keep playing like that, they'll hang in games here.
Joe, let me ask another question, and this is for Adam. From your playing days, when you work so hard on defense, does that make it harder to be effective on offense? Do you get tired?
Where's the hell out of you, Steve? A guy like me, I was waving for a sub every time, man, every 5 minutes, man. I, especially unathletic as I was out of shape and couldn't chase anybody around, but it does, man. It's, you know, when you're having to chase around some of the best, you know, guards in this conference, like you do, it is to see Isaiah do what he's been able to do at, you know, I think he's gotten better at defense this year, especially on the ball and deflections and steals. You know, he's turned it up a level. So, you know, for him to turn on both ends like that, it is, it wears you down defensively if you're grinding. And then especially you see at Air Force when you give up, you know, tough contested outside crazy threes, well, you get crazy long, you know, unexpected rebounds that fly all over the place and somehow end up in their hands. And you know, they make a tough three out of it. And it just mentally breaks you down too. So, you know, you just got to, you know, stick with it. I think defensively we're there. I think, again, we're going to win the tournament. If we make 8.5 to 9 threes a game, I think we can win the whole tournament because we're playing that well defensively. So, I know nobody's done it from the playing game, but, you know, if we go out and shoot 45% every game from three, I think we're in great shape to go all the way. But, you know, I've been saying that probably since the middle of January now. So, you know, you gotta stick with what got you here, and you know the defense is going to be there. And man, we miss a lot of post-ups, don't we, guys? I mean, I see so many post-ups that I feel like I would have got in there back in my days. But, you know, we don't wait long enough. So I get upset when we miss the post a lot. So if we could just feed the post, get those guys open, you know, they're going to do well, obviously.
Those have been dropping lately. Those have been dropping.
Yep, now that's right.
As long as you've been a part of this program from your playing days to calling games, where do you think this defense ranks for CSU? It's probably the best I've seen in the nearly 30 years that I've been watching. Wow, 30 plus years that I've been watching CSU basketball. I mean, it's, to me, this is the best defense that I've seen, whether it's individual performers, especially Neat Clifford. But just the way that we help out on each with each other and the way we fight through the screens at the top, there's so many years where we would try to go under and we give up that easy uncontested three up top.
Right. I'm with you, man. It's been you know, I'd have to go back and look at the stats statistically, but like as undersized as we are to be as good as we are defensively, I think that should play into it as well. I mean, we got one guy over, you know, 6'10", 6'11", and he hasn't played a single game this year. You know, Kyle Evans on the bench. So, it you know, for me to be that undersized and play as well as we do defensively, and not, you know, we give up some now. We do give up some size inside, and that frustrates you. But you're right. It's the communication and the way that we're able to correct our mistakes out of double teams and just, you know, get around and fly to guys and point your man out. That is the marks of a great defensive team, and they definitely have that.
You know, from my perspective, I think we have more quality on-ball defenders than we've ever had. You know, mm-hmm. Neek is great. Josiah's great. Jalen's great. Joel Scott is great as well. We can put four guys on the floor that can really guard the ball. And if you know as well as I do, if you can stop the ball, you got a chance on defense.
Well, I'd like to see us rebound a little more, a little better in this tournament as well. Giving up 9 offensive rebounds to Air Force was painful the other day.
I mean, Adam just said how many of those were just like crazy bounces that
some of them, not all of them.
Yeah. It seems to happen a lot against Air Force and UNLV, you know, and they throw out some crazy stuff, but you know, they're going to go up and chase it down now. So it's the hardest to rebound are those late contested shots. And they're the hardest to recover from when they mentally break you down and they knock down a three, you know, just because you unable to come up with a loose ball, it just really rips you apart.
Well, before we let you go, a few questions heading into the tournament here. What are your thoughts on the pathway for the Rams in this conference tournament, starting with obviously your old coach, Timmy Miles in San Jose State? Get past them, and you got Nevada. You know the team's going to have a little revenge on their mind after a couple of losses there. And again, they got to beat us three times in a season. That's gives you a shot there. And then the winner of Boise, New Mexico, and then the championship. So what are your thoughts on the route? And then starting with Timmy here.
Well, Tim's going to be ready. He's got a week off. So he's been texting me, and I said, we want Tim. And he said, you better be careful what you wish for. And so I'm cautiously optimistic in this one, but to be fair, they could come out and knock down 25, 26 threes against us and really put us, you know, against the wall in a tough position, because that's kind of what they do. They don't got a lot of size. They dealt with a lot of injuries this year, and guys, you know, early got hurt for the year. So he's been putting in a lot of walk-ons, a lot of young guys that probably aren't as ready as they should be. And, you know, if they can make a lot of threes, they're going to be right there at the end. So if we can defend and rebound some of those shots, we'll be just fine. But, you know, then you got to get to Nevada, and they're playing as well as anybody in, you know, not even just our conference, the nation right now. They have one of the, you know, top five streaks or something like that of games won. And, you know, it's going to be a barn burner, you know, as the last one was. And you got that bad taste in your mouth. You want another piece of them, but they're probably going to have Blackshear back. So, you know, that's a completely different monster in Nevada offensively when he's running the show, instead of just running Lucas around the entire time. So it's going to be kind of one of those chess matches. And then, yeah, Boise, New Mexico, you're just not sure, because, you know, New Mexico is really hungry for, you know, get in the tournament, honestly. They got some work to do, like it sounds like. So, I don't know, man, it's interesting. I like our side, though, as far as, you know, I don't know how well Nevada will travel, or, you know, maybe Boise and New Mexico certainly travels. But, you know, for the most part, we're going to see a pretty good neutral floor.
Well, most pundits and all the brackets and bracket matrix have us in around the average of an 8 or 9 seed right now. What do you think getting one more quad one? It would be 6 quad one wins if you could get to that Nevada game and win it. What do you think something like that might do for your seed, if you're seeding any of you three guys? You think that drops us down to a 7? And what if you get to a 7th quad one win if you beat Boise State or New Mexico? So you have a chance to position and improve your seeding a little bit here. What's the ceiling, do you think?
I think if we get to the championship, it'd probably be as high as a 6. I don't know if we can move crazy like that to a 5. Maybe a 5. I don't know. I don't want to be a 5 seed, guys, because I know all too well those 5-12 upsets, and I'm not interested in having any of that. So just put me 6 through 8 or 9, and, you know, let's let the dice roll as I'm on my way to Vegas.
You know, from my perspective, I think so. We're looking at an 8 or a 9 right now. That's been pretty consistent. You know, Lenardi moved us up to a 9 today for no reason at all. That tells me he talked to somebody who said we're a lock to get in the tournament if he moved us up. But I think if we beat Nevada, I don't think we'll move past an 8. To be honest with you. I think if we get to the beat Boise, New Mexico in the semifinal, get to the championship game, I think we can get to a 7, but I think 7 is the ceiling. What I've seen, what we started seeing in the last couple of years, is I don't think there's a lot of movement of teams after the conference, once the conference tournaments start. I think they already have the field pretty much defined. They're waiting to fill it in with the conferences that only have one participant, and then they're waiting to see how they go with the bubble teams. But I don't think you see much movement through the conference tournament, unless a team, a CSU got to the final game. New Mexico is going to have to get, I think, to the semifinal game to get into the tournament. I think they're in trouble. There's too much momentum against them for some reason. I think they deserve to be in. But I don't think you're going to see much movement at all, Joel, to be honest with you. I think our ceiling is a 7.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about chaos, don't let UNLV win the Mount West Conference Tournament. All right. Now we're really going to be, you know, they're going to be looking at the Mount West all they can to cut that to 6, however they can. So I don't want to be on the other side of that. Again, you guys know all too well about that 2015 squad that got, you know, snuck out of there with what, 27 wins and didn't get in. So Wyoming, I'm not interested in any of that.
Yep.
Oh, exactly. And that was Wyoming stole that bid. So you're right. We gotta hope somebody on the other side knocks off UNLV. And yeah. Steve, I mean, exactly. If you look at the bracket matrix and you look at all these bracketologists, the fact that we went from on a few of the names from a bubble to all of a sudden we're that solid, either the last eight or the first nine in, I think you're right. I mean, people are talking and we're pretty much set. A big run, I think, going to the championship game probably just moves us up to an eight. But if we win the whole thing, I could see us dropping, getting a sixth seed, because that right now, that's where San Diego State, where Utah State, where they're getting put at. And if we can beat them and we can get that championship, I could see us moving up to a six.
Hey, Adam, I know you got to leave.
I got to run. I was going to say it's going to be a heck of a run, though, guys. I hear a few of you are coming out. Is that right?
Yeah, I'll be out there, Adam. I won't be there till Friday. Okay. So hopefully we're still alive by then.
All right.
So make sure you get guys. Wins, all right?
I won't be drinking any beer out there. You guys know that, right? After last year's debacle, I'm a cocktail-only guy, all right? So come see me with a Jack and Coke somewhere, all right?
Adam, have a safe trip, and I'll see you next week wherever we go.
Let's do it, man. I'm excited. Thanks, guys, for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, buddy. Have a good trip out. We'll see you there.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right. That was Adam Nygon. What a great job. I love his insights. And guys, before we cut out, I wanted to ask you a couple last questions here. Steve, you've talked about this a lot. Adam and Brian Roth have talked about this on air. Even heard Nico bring this up on Brady Hall's show a couple days ago as well. I mean, the people openly talking about it, a lot of coaches openly talking about the fact that there was not a level playing field from the conference schedule this year. And that has a lot to do why Nevada and Utah State and maybe Boise State are near the top of our standings. They just had, they missed some key games and key road games that schools like CSU had to play. The Mountain West just came out and said, we are going to change to a 20 team schedule next year. I know you've got to be proponents of that and how that would level the playing field.
I'm supportive of it only because Nico's supportive of it. I actually think it does work against you when you have to play multiple games against lousy teams. Those are when you got to go on the road to play a San Jose State and they're a 250 or a 300 team, you are always vulnerable to lose a road game. And I think, you know, the only team that's been fighting this has really been San Diego State, but I actually kind of think they're right. I don't think you want to play these bad teams over and over again. You've seen what I've actually published. I'd love a 20-game schedule, but we need to get rid of the bottom two teams that are really, you know, they're 250 to 300 right now in terms of net. They're all quad four games. You don't want to lose quad four games. And when you only want to schedule those at home during the non-conference schedule, you want nothing but quad one, quad two games. And then if they're quad three, when they come visit you, you can live with that, but you don't want quad four games that are road games. And unfortunately that's what the Mountain West is going to build in next year. You can't tell me that San Jose State is going to be any better next year. You can't tell me that Air Force is going to be any better next year. And that's what I'm concerned about, but I know Nico wants it. I think it's mostly because it's getting harder and harder to schedule 11 non-conference, or excuse me, 13 non-conference games. That's why they have to come in with a couple of Division II games. It's hard to get people to get people scheduled. So it means you only have to schedule 11 non-conference games, and that's I think where they're coming from on this.
And you know, I agree. It's tough on a year like this when you see a Utah State who doesn't have to play. Doesn't have to host UNLV, doesn't have to go to Nevada, and they get two games against Fresno, they get two games against San Jose State, and it's tough whenever you're a CSU who plays the hardest Mountain West schedule, a New Mexico who played the hardest, second hardest Mountain West schedule And those are the 5 and 6 teams that are kind of, I think we're in, but we're kind of on pins and needles about getting in. And it's because we didn't have two gimme games against Fresno and Utah State. But at the other hand, and again, this is Dutcher who was really on this for the last few years of not getting a balanced schedule, not getting the 20 games. Is you're right. I mean, if you go to a San Jose State and lose, if you go to an Air Force and lose, that's almost a killer with your schedule. And I mean, it's tough, but you know, it's when you have a all out champion like Utah State this year, who didn't have to play a tough schedule. Yeah. There's going to be people that are upset, and I'm one of them.
All right. Two more questions. Thoughts on the just general, we don't need to go super in depth on this because I don't necessarily care all that much, but thoughts on the Mountain West get it right with player of the year, Grade Osabor from Utah State, won player of the year, newcomer of the year, defensive player of the year, Lamont Butler from San Diego State. I think obviously the home run easy choice for coach of the year was Danny Sprinkle, Utah State. Anything you didn't like about those?
I have no problem with any of them. I favored Jaden Lede from San Diego State as the player of the year, but I have no problem with them going with this kind of chalk thing of taking the best player off the number one team. And that's what they did. Yeah. That's kind of the age old tradition, and that's okay. This was a really hard year to pick three all conference teams. Mm-hmm. The media one I thought was a little weird because I had four New Mexico players in the top 15 and then the sixth man of the year. And my reaction to that was, how the heck did they ever lose if they got that many all-conference players and the sixth man of the year in Mustafa Amzil? I thought, to be honest with you, I don't think all four of those guys, and the coaches only had three of them. The coaches had Top and Dent and House. Mashburn didn't make one of the top three teams. So all in all, I mean, I think they did a reasonable job. I was a little upset that there wasn't a second CSU person on the media's team. Nick Clifford made the third team of the coaches poll. So I thought that was good. I had Joel Scott. I'm okay with Nick, and I would have liked to have seen Nick make defensive player of the year. He didn't even get selected for the all defensive team. And that's because you got all these coaches going to bat for their players. Alford was horrible about going to bat for Trey Coleman as defensive player of the year. I actually think Lamont Butler is a better defender and deserved that award if Nick Clifford didn't get it. So I thought all in all, though, Joel, I'm like you, I don't really get worked up. I think the one neat thing is we've got the one player at CSU to be the first 5-time all-conference player in Isaiah Stevens, and it might be 100 years before that happens again. You might need COVID to be able to get 5 years out of a player. So, yeah. 100 years from now, maybe there'll be another pandemic and it'll happen. But that's something, that's probably a record that'll never be broken. 5-time all-conference player.
Yeah, I feel the same. I mean, one, all-conference, it is what it is. You know, it's backdoor deals and coaches that, well, if you do this, I'll do this. And the only thing I was upset about is I really thought Nate should have at least made the all defensive team. The fact that he wasn't one of the top 5 defensive players in the Mountain West, whenever you look at his numbers, there's no way he should have been on there, but you know, it is what it is.
Well, and no Joel Scott, even as an honorable mention, was silly. I mean, he had, yep, a great, great conference slate, which is what they're supposed to be looking at, right? Supposed to be looking at players who played their best in league play, and he was really good throughout the conference slate. So, last question, and I think you guys are maybe on opposite sides of this based on some back and forth I've seen in text and stuff. But the Isaiah and McKenna Hofschild number retiring debate. Steve, you and I standing on the court, and after that last game against Wyoming, Kyle Neves came up to us and said, "Hey guys, I want you to know this is obviously going to happen at some point, but these players are required to first be in the Hall of Fame, which I think he said is a 6-year waiting period.
I thought he said 8 on that.
I thought he said 8 too, but someone said that he did actually say 8. This would confuse me, but when Becky went into the Hall of Fame, I think it only took 6 years. So I don't know, maybe there was a policy change, but anyway, and he made it sound like regardless, we're going to be waiting 6 years. I thought Kevin Lytle had a great column about this, said it should be done sometime no later than next year's basketball season to do it properly and honor both of them coming back during a gap in their schedule. So I think it should be done right away. It's a no-brainer. It's obvious. You've gone to bat for this, Steve, in your own columns, yep, and on your podcast many times. So I know where you stand.
You know what? Let me add something to that too. So yeah, I'm very much behind it. I'm not in favor of what Kevin Lytle said of doing it at a football game, because that's not Moby Arena, for God's sake.
Oh, I thought he meant Moby. He was talking
football? He was talking about honoring him at a football game. Mm. And that, I don't know. I think that's kind of, and so what do? You open up Moby and do a ceremony when there's no one, you don't have 8,000 people there. I think that's crazy. But that being said, the other thing I wanted to bring up, you know that Zach Edey of Purdue had his number hung in the rafters after his final home game the other day at Purdue. It can be, he's not in their Hall of Fame. They've got 20 plus people, I think, hanging in the rafters. They've got a rich history, and I think it's the first time they've ever done it for a player at the end of their career. I think they've always brought somebody back and done it. It could have been done. I honestly think, Joel, had we had maybe a different athletic director with a little more assertiveness, I think John would have been very much behind getting something done. I just think he came onto the scene a little too late to make it happen. Had he been in place at the start of the season, I think we would have seen it done. So I'm disappointed. I wish it could have been done. I'd like to see it done as soon as possible. As I told you when we were talking to Kyle, I just want to be alive when it happens.
Well, and that's understandable. Right.
I want to hear your point too, Mike, but I agree with Steve. I mean, I think that CSU historically has been very stingy with honoring former greats, very unwilling to put number, what do we have, 3 up at Hughes or at Canvas now, and in our history, basketball, what do we got, 2-3 up there? What is the hesitancy to honor? I mean, it's part of the tradition, like embrace some of the greats that we've had and show them off. And, you know, maybe you don't have to not allow players to wear, you don't block players from wearing that number. You know, I don't know if you need to go to that level, but you need to put them up in the rafters and honor them. I don't get the hesitancy myself. Mike, what do you think?
I'll say this, like Isaiah deserves 4 up in the rafters, hands down. He completely 100% deserves it. But there's something to be said about, you know, we honored him when he got his 2000, when he broke the scoring record. We honored him when he got the assist record. We honored him on senior night. There's something to be said for him to come back a few years later, and you get to watch that, and you get to relive like those moments, the 5 years that we watched him, and you know, you get to relive that. And to me, that's what makes honoring a number, honoring a retired player, you know, the Ring of Fame at the Bronco games. You know, I was there when Fat Lever's number got put in the rafters. I think I was there for Mutombo's as well. I mean, it's great to have those memories, and I don't think it's as special when it's in the moment. To me personally, I mean, yes, if they lifted it up last weekend, it would have been against Wyoming. It would have been awesome, and it might have gotten dusty in there, but it would be right.
Shocking.
It would, yeah, exactly. But like, there is something said about seeing it a few years down the line, and just, you know, really reliving that. As far as McKinn is concerned, you know, I think she is an amazing player, and I love the way that she is with the fans. Like the way she's been with my own daughter has been unreal. But unless Katie Cronin's number goes up there, you know, who was an All-American, who did get that team to the Sweet 16, that right alongside Becky. Unless hers gets up there, I don't see how we could put somebody who hasn't led the team to a Mountain West title, who hasn't led us to an NCAA appearance. To me, that one's hard, especially because Ellen was a four-time All-Mountain West player as well and won Mountain West titles, and we're not talking about her number going up there. So I don't know. To me, that one's kind of hard. I think Cronin deserves it. If whoever the next person is, I think she does a little bit more just because what she helped with the team, helped lead the team.
Your wife disagrees, by the way. Your wife disagrees.
Tracy Rowe chiming in from the bleachers.
That wouldn't be the first time she disagreed. I love her. I love her. And if her number gets up there, I'll be there to celebrate that. I'm not saying that she's not great. She is. She's definitely one of our all-time greats. Definitely deserves to be in the CSU Hall of Fame. Rafters is a little bit different.
Mikey, you know, like I get your point on McKenna versus Katie. And also, you know, versus Ellen Nystrom, four-time All-Mountain West player. You know, the one thing that she did, and it's a record I don't think will ever be broken, you know, their record when she was here in conference was 63-9. I mean, that's pretty amazing. They went undefeated one year in conference. They won 15 games the other 3 years. We haven't seen that in recent years. And so I think it's fair what you're saying. In terms of McKenna versus Katie and players like Ellen, I would like to see it hang, but I don't think it's been as as you're pointing out, I don't think she's necessarily had as impactful a career as Isaiah has. She's had one less year, and I think the NCAA tournament appearances makes a little bit of a difference.
Yeah, I mean they haven't really. I think her first year they made a run to the championship game in the Mountain West tournament. Other than that, they've been one and done last year. No, they won one game last year. They won one game this year, but they have not won a postseason game. I think they're 0-3 in the WNIT. So, yeah, there's something to be said for winning being a strong criteria or heavy weighted criteria when you're having your name put in the rafters. But regardless, great player, and someday Hall of Fame for sure. Love to see Zay up in the rafters ASAP. So, all right, boys. Well, great conversation today. Loved having both of you to talk a little hoops. It's been fun talking hoops this year. Maybe we can do one more recap after our run to the Final Four here in a few weeks. yeah, great stuff today. And hopefully, by the time I post this, the CSU women's already going to be done with their game against UNLV. Hopefully they can knock them off. That's a tall task there. UNLV's playing for some really good ball this year. And hopefully the Rams can make it.
If we win the Mountain West tournament in women's, four goes up.
Okay. You heard it here first from Mike Rowe.
Let's put that up on the scoreboard at the T&M, man. You win, you're in the rafters, McKenna.
I like it. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Let's go, Rams.
You bet. Thanks, Joel. Thanks, Mikey.